leaders in Wisconsin's capital are clashing, and we're talking about it here on The Morning Show. Wisconsin lawmakers are speaking up on gun policy, and the facts don't always line up with their points. It's The Morning Show on the State Capitol Report, and I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. Republicans rejected Governor Tony Evers' call to take up legislation addressing gun violence. We'll get the details from our State Capitol reporter ahead, but first we're fact-checking elected officials who are weighing in on this gun debate. And you're part of the discussion. Have you heard an inaccurate claim during gun policy debates? What was it? And how did you figure out the statement was wrong? 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Eric Litke is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and PolitiFact Wisconsin. Eric, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
You know, we'll take specific claims about gun policy as we move ahead. Let's first talk about a statement that criticizes the renewed focus on guns. Back in August, after the mass shootings in Dayton, Ohio and El Paso, Texas, Wisconsin State Representative Ron Tussler posted on Facebook that mass shootings were down under President Trump. Eric, what did you learn while researching the number of mass shootings over time?
So this came immediately in the aftermath of these back-to-back shootings. There was the El Paso Walmart shooting on August 3rd, the Dayton, Ohio shooting August 4th. Later on August 4th, Tussler's post on Facebook was, "Less mass shootings under Trump. His base doesn't hate anyone." That text was accompanied by a reposting of a chart shared by another person, so we're kind of a third-generation chart here, showing 24 mass shootings under President Barack Obama and 4 under President Trump. Now, we see the chart was really the primary problem where this went awry here. So the data that it references is badly outdated. It came from a 2018 article in National Affairs, and that article itself was pulling from an LA Times story. The LA Times, however, was not presenting a comprehensive timeline of mass shootings. They are basically highlighting what they called notable mass shootings. So we have the core issue is that we're using kind of a summary of significant mass shootings to draw a comprehensive conclusion about how many shootings there have been.
And then there's also the issue of the numbers themselves, right? I mean, we have 2 years of President Trump. We have 8 years under President Obama. So if mass shootings are a problem, it would reason that we would have seen more under President Obama's tenure than Trump simply because of the number of years.
Absolutely. It's nonsense to use a round numbers comparison when you're talking about 8 years under Obama as compared to about 2 years under Trump at that point. So what we did is we looked at a rate stat. So converting this to the number of mass shootings that happened in each year. Mass shootings are kind of a tricky definition, but we went with what the Washington Post uses for their pretty comprehensive database, which is 4 or more people shot and killed in a single incident, not counting something like gang violence. And we can see there a steady rise over time, regardless of which party is in power. We could see about 2 mass shootings per year under Presidents Reagan and George H.W. Bush, about 3.5 per year under Presidents Clinton and George W. Bush. That then jumps to about 5 mass shootings per year under Obama, about 8 under Trump. So ultimately, what we see is exactly the opposite of what Representative Tussler claims, which is that the shootings are indeed up under Trump as they have been under each of his recent predecessors.
And you rated this claim of Representative Tussler pants on fire. For listeners who aren't familiar with PolitiFact's rating system, help us understand how you come to a pants on fire rating. That's the least truthful. Is that an appropriate way to explain it?
Sure. So we have a scale that goes anywhere from true and then mostly true, half true, mostly false. And pants on fire is what we describe as completely false, but also ridiculous. This certainly reaches into that category, not only with the timing of it, but the outdated data, and then ultimately being the polar opposite of where indeed this trend is going.
How did Representative Tussler respond to your analysis?
So his response was basically that he was not aware that the chart he was posting was that outdated. He said he used raw numbers because they at least can't be twisted or biased. And it was an ironic response, of course, given that in this case, raw numbers certainly are biased, comparing a full 2 years under Obama to a half a term under Trump.
Eric Liedtke is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and PolitiFact Wisconsin. I'm Keely Boltina, and we want to hear from you. How do you respond when someone makes an inaccurate claim while debating public policy? Do you correct them? Do you let it slide? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's move on to a couple of statements by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss during a Facebook Live interview with TMJ4's Charles Benson. You analyzed part of their discussion about so-called red flag laws.
Red flag laws, it's basically like saying we're going to take away your car because we think you could drive drunk.
But a judge has to decide.
No, they take away your weapon first. Then you have to go back and ask for permission to get the weapon back.
That was Voss describing red flag laws, and Benson jumping in. Voss later made the same point while criticizing a poll that found broad support for red flag laws when a judge is involved.
The way they ask that question,
That's
not the way the red flag law works. They take it away first. Then you have to get permission from a judge to do it.
So, Eric, what did you find when researching whether red flag laws allow guns to be taken away from people before a judge is involved?
So red flag laws have been around for a while. They date back to Connecticut in 1990. As of now, about 17 states, as well as the District of Columbia, have a so-called red flag law, commonly called emergency risk protection orders. But typically, they do not work, as Voss describes. A judge is absolutely fundamental to this process. What we typically see is that there is an allowance in state statute for police or family members, or in some cases a school official or a mental health professional, to come before a judge and say, here's the case, why I believe this person is an imminent risk to themselves or others. The judge can then issue a preliminary order without any kind of a hearing and or without any notification to the gun owner. So then anywhere from 2 to 21 days, that hearing is in effect, the guns can be taken, and then there is a hearing on a final order where the gun owner has a chance to come before the judge and make his case before there would be something more long-term issued. A final order would typically last for about a year. But the key difference here is that the judge is involved from the get-go, and this includes the proposal that Governor Evers brought forward as he was pushing for a special session in Wisconsin. That would have created this preliminary order that lasts about 14 days. But again, nothing can be done without a judge being involved from the start.
You gave a mostly false rating to Representative Voss for those red flag law claims. How did you land on that rating?
So mostly false is a statement that is generally inaccurate, but has kind of an element of truth. The element of truth in this case is that Indiana is the one state in the country that does have something roughly like what he describes. Police there are able to seize firearms without first obtaining a judicial order. They are then required to immediately make a statement to a judge who can then overturn that initial decision. So there's an immediate judicial review involved, but there is essentially the ability to seize guns without a judge's immediate involvement. So that is certainly the exception and not the rule. Out of the 17 states that have a law in this vein, it's the only one that allows something like that. So given that that is the exception and that's not the proposal that was being brought forth in Wisconsin, we landed on a mostly false for the representative.
Eric Liedtke stays with us. He's a reporter for PolitiFact Wisconsin and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we're talking about whether what politicians are saying about gun control is based in truth. And we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. How much weight do you place in lawmakers' statements and their campaign promises when voting? Have you ever voted against a candidate because they didn't follow through on a pledge? Give us a call. I'm Keely Boltina. This is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We're talking about claims Wisconsin leaders are making as they wrestle with the policy and politics of gun control. Our guest takes pains to rate what's said as true, mostly true, half true, mostly false, false, or pants on fire. And you're part of this conversation, 800-642-1234. What question do you have about red flag gun laws? What do you want to know about universal background checks? Have you heard a politician say something about gun control and think, wait, is that right? Tell us about it. Email ideas@WPR.org. PolitiFact Wisconsin and Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter Eric Litke is our guest. He's checking the accuracy of state leaders, and we're focusing on conversations about guns. Governor Tony Evers and other Democrats are urging red flag laws and universal background checks. Two statements here on universal background checks we have, starting with a claim by Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald.
On universal background checks, too, I mean, anytime you're going to ask somebody to submit the serial numbers from their guns to a state or federal official, it's going to violate the Second Amendment. So I just don't see anything happening on that front as well.
That was Fitzgerald advocating against universal background checks during a September interview with WSIN. Eric, do gun background checks involve submitting serial numbers to authorities?
So this is a common argument that we hear from opponents of universal background checks, basically saying that any kind of a background check to this degree can be tantamount to a gun registry, where the government has a record of which gun each person owns. It's seen as basically a step towards confiscation. So the two elements of this claim we need to check out are, yes, are serial numbers submitted to state or federal officials during the process? And then does that violate the Second Amendment? So right now, Wisconsin is one of 29 states that do not require background checks for private gun sales. So there's a split for sales from like a registered gun dealer. Those are overseen by the ATF, required under federal law that a background check takes place. However, an exchange between private parties, there is nothing like that in current state law. So the universal background check would extend to that. So diving into this claim, the question basically becomes what information is submitted. So in Wisconsin, if someone is purchasing a long gun, the dealers fill out it's called the ATF Form 4473, that includes the gun make and the serial number. That is then sent through the FBI's criminal background check system. However, there are a series of kind of safeguards in place from the federal government side to make sure that these don't turn into a registry of some sort. So the information that is received for this background check, the FBI is required by law to destroy the identifying information on the purchaser and on the gun within 24 hours. The second piece of this is that the dealer is then required to keep a copy of this form for at least 20 years or until they go out of business. After that point, those records go to the ATF so that they are stored long term. However, the ATF is expressly forbidden from retaining these in any kind of searchable format or to establish any kind of registration system. So it's actually kind of an interesting background. They have to go through decades-old microfilm technology when they're trying to trace a gun now, for example. That's the process for long guns. For handguns, it's pretty similar. The same form is filled out, but the State Department of Justice is responsible for the background check. So we see that basically if there was a comprehensive system that ultimately this information would make it to the federal government eventually. But there's a significant delay in making it to the ATF. In the case of this form, it could be 20 years or longer before the ATF gets it. And at that point, the ATF is still required or prohibited from turning that into any kind of a database, which is really kind of the core of what Fitzgerald was concerned about there.
Yeah. And, you know, what stands out to me is that he also cited the Second Amendment, and that can be kind of a flashpoint for some people. So what have the courts ruled on this? Is something like this, universal background check, something that is violating the Second Amendment of our Constitution?
So universal background checks are not creating gun registries. The argument is that they could, and therefore that would violate it. Well, it's interesting to note that there are six states and the District of Columbia that actually do require that step of registration of some or all firearms, and those have been upheld by the courts. Many of those state laws have been in place for decades, None have been overturned on the grounds that they violate any individual's Second Amendment.
You also examined a claim on background checks from State Attorney General Josh Call. In an August tweet, the Attorney General claimed people convicted of a dangerous felony and people under a domestic violence restraining order, these people can currently buy firearms without background checks. Is that a true claim?
It is. So there was a bit of confusion on this, judging by some of the reaction online. It's, of course, not saying whether someone should buy a firearm without going through a background check, simply whether that is possible under the current system. As we kind of discussed with the Fitzgerald item, we have this two-pronged system where any purchase from a federal firearms dealer, so we're talking about something that takes place at a traditional a retail type of establishment, background checks are required there. But for a purchase between private parties, Wisconsin is one of the states that does not have any kind of requirement there. So most guns are purchased through dealers. A 2015 study found only about 22% of gun owners bought their most recent firearm without going through a background check. Nevertheless, Wisconsin is one of 29 states at this point that does not have any state-level regulations. So one of the places that we see this popping up is a website called Arms List. It's a Craigslist-style marketplace that connects private sellers and is very heavily used. We wrote this item in September 2019. At that point, there were about 2,000 firearms for sale from private parties in Wisconsin alone.
Eric Lipke is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and PolitiFact Wisconsin. I'm Keely Boltina, and we're talking about how Eric is fact-checking the statements that politicians and officials in Wisconsin are saying around gun policy. And I want to welcome Kevin from Dodgeville to the conversation now. Kevin, thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me. And I'd like to say your speaker is a fantastic expert on this subject. I'm of the opinion that most common sense thinking people are in favor of background checks. I think that's necessary in the time that we live in. I am not in favor of anyone buying a gun without a background check. I think it's a loophole that needs to be closed. I am concerned with another aspect of this, and that's the inheritance aspect of inheriting weapons and things like that, coming to weapons without a legal purchase. How exactly does that work?
Kevin, thanks so much for the call. And Eric, it's a little off of what we're saying to try to explore that. Did you want to address whether you're fact checking anything when it comes to beyond these statements with background checks and red flag laws when it comes to guns? Maybe something about inheritance.
Unfortunately, I'm not going to be much help on that particular one. Not something that we have researched in terms of what the current laws are, or what changes might be sought right now,
or what politicians are really talking about right now. Eric, how do you find people respond when you fact check lawmakers? What did the lawmakers say about that?
Our goal is always to at least be transparent in how we came to our conclusions. Obviously, a statement that comes down with a false or mostly false or a pants on fire kind of rating, we're not going to get a great reaction from the people that we're fact checking. But our goal is to be just really upfront in what our sources are, where we've gotten the background, the information, and ultimately how we've broken down the claim. That's really kind of the core element of what we do, is that, you know, we're not writing any kind of a comprehensive treatise on red flag laws, for example. What we're doing is looking at one specific sentence or two and saying, okay, is this an accurate description of what's going on right now, an accurate description of this topic? Is the context that they used it in a fair way to refer to this? So it's a way to kind of give some background on a topic as a way of better understanding it. But ultimately, we're dealing with how one particular person has phrased it. So a lot of the pushback that we get tends to be from people who just see us as, you know, maybe not coming down on their side of the political aisle. But really, it's about how that particular phrase treated an issue.
We have less than a minute left, but I want to make sure we get in whether Governor Tony Evers has fulfilled his campaign pledges and promises. Have you found a place where the governor has fallen short?
So there has been a few of these. As we did with Scott Walker before him, we were looking at a series of promises that Governor Evers has made. One of the highest profile ones that we found has not been kept was a last minute campaign pledge that he made to raise no taxes. This showed up late in the campaign, said it in a couple different venues. And this is one of those things where it's important to note that we rate outcomes and not intent.
All right. And Eric, I'm sorry, we'll have to leave it right there. Eric Liedtke is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and PolitiFact Wisconsin. We'll make sure to have him back. We've been talking about how state leaders are talking about gun control and whether their statements are rooted in fact. We'll get the latest breakdown from a Wisconsin public radio reporter next as the state capitol report continues after the news. I'm Keely Boltina. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network.